smart, strong, and together. Pure ego-tripping. We get stuck into that outdated model of leadership that says that the best leader is the one who talks the most, speaks the loudest, and listens the least. We make the mistake of thinking that the person doing most of the talking is the one who has all of the answers. Wrong. Leadership is about listening and allowing others to feel heard. That takes a big person. Some people really do believe listening is a soft skill, but in fact, it's so very hard. And it does take a brave person to turn down the noise of their ego so they can turn up the volume of their listening. It takes a really powerful and secure human being to be quiet enough to let the ideas of others be considered and heard. Jackson walked over to Tommy and sat down next to him. Come on over, Blake. Let's get a little bit of this sun. The sun was getting lower in the Manhattan sky. There wasn't a single cloud to be seen. The modern towers sparkled, and I could hear the noises from the congested streets below us. A thought came to me as I sat down next to these two gentlemen. This was a truly great day to be alive. Here's the thing about getting really good at understanding people and deep listening. You've given them a gift that most individuals never receive. Most people, and I'm serious about this, have lived an entire lifetime without having anyone show them what masterful listening looks and feels like.
Why?
Because we're all so incredibly busy and self-absorbed. All mere excuses, of course, but when you listen, and listening is such a different thing from hearing, the person speaking begins to feel so understood. That personal hunger to have their voice heard begins to get fed. They feel safe. Trust grows. And then, guess what happens?
No clue, Jackson, I responded, leaning forward with interest.
Because they feel safe, they slowly begin to take down the protective armor that they put on each morning before they leave the security of their homes and move out into a hard and fast world. They dismantle the guard they have erected against the disappointment and discouragement they expect from people in their lives. That person begins to see that you really care about them. That person begins to get that you want them to win. That person begins to realize that you have their best interests in mind. And so they begin to give you their very best.
Fascinating process, I replied.
It is. And when that starts to happen, the relationship starts to ascend into outright success. Your teammates begin to worship the ground on which you stand. They'll champion you, encourage you, and go to bat for you when you need them. And your customers will become your goodwill ambassadors, evangelizing your good name to anyone who cares to listen to them on every street they walk.
All three of us started to laugh. Jackson's passion was palpable. I could easily see that he loved talking about leadership, the power of relationships, and developing the genius of people.
The M in human will remind you to mingle. Be out there connecting with your teammates and networking with your customers. There's such an awesome value in circulation. Positive results and incredible victories you never expected begin to show up just because you're out there mingling with the people you do business with. When people see your face, you stand out. They get to know you. They begin to like you. And always remember that people love doing business with people they like.
So true, Jackson. My customers at the bookstore like me a lot because of my enthusiasm for books, and so they keep coming back.
In these competitive times, keeping your relationships clean and strong is strikingly important. Now is not the time to hide out in your cubicle. Now is not the time for anyone in business to retreat behind a wall of email. Now is definitely the time to be out there, building bridges, rolling up your sleeves, and connecting with your colleagues and customers while you help them get to where they want to go. Drink coffee with your stakeholders. Have lunches with your customers. Find out what worries are keeping them up at night and how they are feeling during this period of dazzling turbulence in the business world. Tell them that you are with them not only in the easy times, but during the tough ones. They'll never forget you for this, and they'll reward you with their loyalty.
Interesting. And the A in human? I asked curiously.
Amuse, came Jackson's warm reply. Most of us think work needs to be so serious. We're afraid that if we laugh and have some fun and get a bit playful at the right time, we'll be perceived as wasting time and being unproductive. But here's the truth, my friend. Having fun while you do great work will help you boost your productivity. Fun makes you more engaged in whatever you're doing. Fun makes you want to collaborate more. And when people are having fun, the energy of the entire organization shifts into higher and higher levels. When people are enjoying themselves at work, their stress levels are lower. They are far more willing to do the unexpected, to over-deliver for all customers, and they are excited to work a whole lot harder. Please remember the value of being amused and engaged when you walk into that bookstore every day, and the need to amuse and engage all those teammates around you, since you are now a leader without a title. Jackson looked at his watch. He then started speaking more quickly, yet without any loss of focus on me and the lessons he was sharing. "The N in human will connect you with one of my favorite leadership ideas, Blake," Jackson continued, as the afternoon sun started to descend behind the office towers and awe-inspiring monuments that make up New York City's famous skyline. "Nurture. As I suggested a little earlier, before the demise of some of our best-known companies, business was all about me, me, me versus we, we, we. The old way of doing business was all about getting. It was all about giving away as little as possible for as much money as possible in as short a time as possible. The depth and breadth of your relationship with each of your customers and each of the people you work with didn't matter much. Customers were expendable. Lose one because you are not true to your word or by not delivering on what you said you would. No worries. Just get another customer. And if a teammate is unhappy with you because you did not appreciate them or because you were somehow unfair, no problem. Just go out and find another replacement of that human capital. But you know that business is not at all what it used to be. With the unprecedented interconnectedness that technology has introduced into our lives, even one angry customer is one too many. All it takes is one customer with a mission to demolish your reputation, to destroy your brand. On the flip side, even one customer who stands in the pure delight over the way you wowed her can spread the good word of your great business to her following of thousands. And when it comes to teammates, the new world of work is such that talent matters. You just can't treat human beings like capital because they just aren't. Lose one great person, and it just might cost you a lot more than you could ever imagine. So all I'm saying is, nurture. Be awesomely nice. Being nice isn't being weak. Please don't confuse kindness with weakness. Leaders without a title brilliantly balance being compassionate with being courageous, being friendly with being firm, being sincere with being strong. Yes, they definitely put people and relationships first, but no one's saying they don't demand the highest performance, the largest commitment, and the most spectacular results. They manage to be tender and tough at the same time. That's a rare balance point to get right, but with dedication and practice, you'll get there. And if being nice is such an obvious business strategy, then why are so few people practicing it? It takes a masterful understanding of human relations to see the best in people who have yet to see the best in themselves. View people accurately as they are, but always treat them with such respect and kindness that they quickly step into all that you've dreamed they could be. Make the time each day amid the chaos of your everyday tasks to grow your relationships. Offer those around you a smile, a positive word, or a caring gesture. Such acts are not signs of a meek person. No, they're the acts of a bold leader. So be nurturing. Be spectacularly caring. Become outstandingly nice. Leave every single person who intersects your path better, happier, and more engaged than you found them. Then just watch what that'll do for your career.
"And your life," noted Tommy, as he studied one of the sculptures on the terrace.
"Okay. That's all I really have to say, Blake. Take care of people, and the money will take care of itself. Help people get to their goals, and people will help you get every single one of yours. Make the people you do business with super successful, and they'll be sure to make you super successful. The law of reciprocity is such a profound law of leadership and human nature."
"I'll remember it, Jackson," I said appreciatively.
"Fantastic. Just remember that this law simply speaks to the fact that people naturally feel an intense obligation and desire to reply to the kindness and support that someone else has given them. We have this innate human tendency to want to be good to people who have been good to us. So the creation of value for others and being exceptionally nice to them sets up this desire within them to return the favor. Now, of course, you want to do all of this from a place of good intention. You want to be good to people because it's the right thing to do, as opposed to doing it to manipulate them into feeling obliged to give you what you want. To help and give with no real expectation of anything in return is a real gift. Anything less is no gift at all. And when you give from this generous mindset, like I'm saying, dazzlingly positive results come your way. "I completely hear you," I replied, wishing I had more time with this world-class business thinker now wearing the overalls of a simple gardener. Jackson reached into his pocket and pulled out another small bag of seeds. "Here, Blake. These are seeds from some rare sunflowers. A small reminder for you to grow people. Believe in them. Care for them. Nurture them. Water them. Give the best you have to give them. And then watch what harvests sprout up." I do know how corny that sounds, but the metaphor does speak to a natural leadership truth. People are really the most important element to a winning business.
"And relationships are one of the most essential pieces to a great life," Tommy added in a heartfelt tone.
Jackson walked over. "Give me some love, my friend," he said as he gave me a final hug. "It's been fun meeting you. I can tell you're a decent man. That's so important in this age where being real is more essential than ever before. And I have no doubt you'll be a marvelous leader without a title, who will positively influence the lives of so many people. Hey, make sure you use those seeds. The flowers that'll grow from them will definitely blow your mind."
The third leadership conversation of the Lead Without a Title philosophy. The deeper your relationships, the stronger your leadership. The five rules: helpfulness, understanding, mingle, amuse, nurture. Instant action step. Take 5 minutes right now to think about the person who has had the biggest influence on you. What are the three things that made them so special? How could you install those beliefs or behaviors and ways of being into your work and home life starting today? Leadership quote to remember. No man will make a great leader who wants to do it all himself or to get all the credit for doing it. Andrew Carnegie. Chapter 7. The Fourth Leadership Conversation. To be a great leader, first become a great person. If everyone was satisfied with themselves, there would be no heroes. Mark Twain. It was early evening by the time Tommy and I reached the Meatpacking District, an area downtown on the west side known for its hipster hangouts and trendy boutiques. Tommy was quiet. I could tell there was something on his mind.
"Blake, my friend," he said, as we walked into an upscale restaurant called Voodoo. "You're about to meet the last of the four teachers, yet another remarkable human being who will share the fourth and final principle of the Lead Without a Title philosophy so that you can unleash your inner leader and operate at your absolute best. After that, our time together will be over."
Tommy didn't say another word. He looked away from me. I heard him sigh. "But I'm sure I'll see you at work every day, Tommy. And just watch the way I'll be showing up starting on Monday morning when I get back to the bookstore. Just watch. Already I feel so fundamentally different. I'm so sure I'll be the rock star of our location," I exclaimed with an extremely high level of passion. Tommy remained silent. He simply gazed down intently as we walked by the entrance to the restaurant and then down a flight of steps to the basement. Rather than looking run down and seedy, the space was bright and welcoming, with modern art drawings in black metal frames hung along the walls. As we made our way down a corridor, cool music played, as beautiful people in black clothes gracefully made their way past us.
Perhaps we were headed into a chill-out lounge or something. I wasn't quite sure what Tommy was up to or where he was leading me until we walked up to a glass door that had the following words etched into the frosted green glass. Amber Spa and Wellness Center. Below it read, Jet Brisley, Certified Massage Therapist.
Get ready to meet your final teacher, Blake the Great.
Tommy spoke, gently.
He's truly amazing. But first, we'll have to wait our turn. As you can see, he's an extremely popular guy,
Tommy observed as he pointed to a waiting room packed with fashionably dressed people.
This teacher's a massage therapist?
I asked.
Uh-huh. One of the finest there is. He's given me a ton of massages in the time that I've known him, and I can't really put into words how great I feel when he's done with me. Jet's got hands of pure magic. Ever had a massage before, Blake?
Nope, never tried it.
Well, you're in for a treat.
He's gonna give me a massage?
Only if you're lucky, Tommy replied. Only if you're really lucky. Jet is without a doubt the most famous massage therapist in all of New York City. All the boys from Wall Street come down here to de-stress and renew. Movie stars and supermodels often wait their turns in this waiting room. I've heard that even a few of the members of the British royal family have made the pilgrimage over to Jet to get them back to their very best. He's pure genius at what he does, and one of my best friends in the entire world.
Then why do we have to wait in line? I questioned sincerely.
Because above all else, Tommy replied, the man is fair. He's a person of deep integrity, like each of the other special teachers you've met today. He lives for doing what's right, not in a cold and boring way, but in a way that balances being wildly ethical with being absolutely wonderful. Hey, that sounds sort of poetic, doesn't it, Blake?
Tommy noted with a wink, slapping my back joyfully.
After about 30 minutes, we found ourselves in front of Jet Brisley, New York's superstar massage therapist.
Jet glanced at us. On seeing Tommy, he broke into a broad grin.
Hi, Tommy. I was wondering when you were going to stop by. Great to see you. I'm really happy you're here.
The two friends gave each other a warm hug and then playfully pretended to box. Must have been one of the rituals of their friendship. I just stood there watching the two of them energetically sparring like a couple of schoolboys. It was amusing. This was truly an unforgettable day.
I'll bet this is Blake from the bookstore, Jet said, turning to me and reaching for my hand with both of his, the kind of handshake favored by the finest politicians. Superb to meet you, he offered, with genuine warmth.
My pleasure, Jet, I replied. Quite the fan club you have down here.
I'm so grateful for it, Blake, but I'll admit, I've earned it, too. I still work harder than most people you'll ever meet. Blood, sweat, and tears are necessary to reach dreams, hopes, and joys. Helping people stay in peak health so they can lead without a title runs in my family. I'm fourth generation in this profession. I see it as my art. And I get so much fulfillment from my profession because I know that people can't be ridiculously great in their work lives until they first feel ridiculously great within their inner lives. You can't energize anyone around you if you have no energy yourself. And it's not really possible to make others feel good about themselves until you're feeling really, really good yourself. My goal is to get better at it every day so I can help more people get healthier and stronger. Anyway, enough about me. We need to focus on you. First, I hear you served in Iraq.
I did, Jet. It was quite a time. And my deployment has caused me a lot of pain as I've tried to transition back into civilian life. I got really discouraged and really stuck the past few years. But I'm excited to say that as a result of what I've learned today about leading without a title, I see the whole experience incredibly differently. I now understand it will serve me so well, and that I can leverage my time at war into an opportunity to take things to a whole new level of leadership mastery in all that I do.
That's exactly right, Blake. But I do want to offer you real thanks for what you did, and for all the sacrifices that I'm sure you made. You and your fellow soldiers have done so much for every American. Thank you.
You're welcome, Jet, I said gratefully. It's wonderful to be here.
So I'll get right into what Tommy has brought you to my spa to learn. Sound okay?
Absolutely.
By now you've met the beautiful Anna and learned the first principle of the LWT philosophy.
I need no title to be a leader, I recited quickly.
Excellent.
You've also met our friendly ski legend, the charismatic former pro athlete Ty Boyd, and discovered the second principle. Remember it, Blake? Wondered Jet aloud.
Of course, tough times make great leaders, I responded confidently.
Superb, Jet clapped his hands. This guy's a good scholar, Tommy. The kids learn the lessons well, he noted with a gentle smile.
I know,
replied Tommy, as he studied the art that covered the walls.
I'm really proud of him.
The third principle in the Lead Without a Title philosophy is, the deeper your relationship, the stronger your leadership. My buddy Jackson, the visionary gardener, taught you that one powerfully, I'm sure.
And I have the seeds to prove it, I said, as I reached into my pocket and pulled one out.
Jet smiled again. Yeah, he's a pretty cool guy. And so that brings you to me. I'm all about the fourth and final principle, Blake, and it just might be the most important one. I say that with total humility, but I believe that it's true. This principle is the foundation that holds it all together. You can't lead without a title until you get this lesson right.
And the principle is? I requested impatiently.
Before I share it with you, may I ask you a question? Jet asked politely.
Of course.
What would you think of a professional athlete who said to a reporter in the locker room that he had made a decision not to train anymore? To stop all practice and to cut out any advanced preparation. But he still was sure he'd perform like a superstar on the playing field.
I'd think he was a little crazy, I replied candidly.
Right, said Jet, nodding his head. Makes no sense, does it? Yet, Blake, before we go to work with the hope of delivering our best games, how many of us on the playing field of business make the time to train, practice, and prepare?
Not many business people do that. I admitted honestly.
Exactly. And yet they expect to get winning results. That's no different from the insanity of that pro athlete wanting to have the championship without having to condition for it. So this final principle of Lead Without a Title is all about the importance of training and strengthening your inner leader so that you perform at extraordinary levels when you go out to work, and building up such extreme amounts of internal power that you're pretty much invincible in the face of deep change and relentless pressure.
Really fascinating, Jet. I used to play football in school, and I love sports, so your athlete metaphor really hits home. And it's very true, now that I think about it. I don't train hard to be at my best before I go into the bookstore, and yet I wonder why my results are less than spectacular. I guess I'm not taking personal responsibility for my actions. I can see even more evidence of me playing victim.
To be a great leader, first become a great person. It's really as straightforward as that. An excellent organization is really just a cluster of people showing personal excellence in all they do. So as you and each of your teammates awaken your inner leaders and play at your absolute best, your company will automatically rise to its absolute best. Make sense? Jet questioned enthusiastically.
Perfect sense, I replied.
Greatness on the outside begins within, Jet added. You can't unleash peak performance at work until you feel like performing at your peak. You can't show world-class toughness against competition if you don't have mental toughness within yourself. And it's just not possible to unlock the best in your teammates without first being connected with the best in you. This final lesson is all about personal leadership. Lead yourself first. Only then will you get to a place as a person where you can lead other people. Devote yourself to becoming so incredibly strong on the inside that you appear to be failure-proof from the outside. Work really hard on yourself so that all the buried treasure slumbering deep within you begins to reveal itself to every element of the world around you. Start to clean up your negative beliefs and your false assumptions about the kind of leader you can become, as well as about the profound achievements you can create. Develop the self-awareness to arrive at a deep relationship with your once dormant potential, your largest ambitions, and your highest aims. Do the inner work required to make your character richer, your intentions purer, and your acts bigger. Train hard to get your health into high gear so that each day you are full of energy and radiant in vitality. Success belongs to the energetic, you know?
I definitely understand that now, I replied.
Part of becoming a truly great person and leading yourself also involves clearing up the emotional dimension of your inner life, releasing any resentments you may be carrying, and letting go of all baggage from the past. All that junk is just slowing you down and blocking your greatness from fully expressing itself. And real self-leadership additionally requires work on your spiritual life, Blake. Polishing that connection to the highest part of you so that you donate your best years at work to doing deeds that will last beyond your death.
My death?
Yes, Blake. Life's a blink. It all rushes by in a fast little flash when you really get down to it. The time to think about your legacy and how you want to be remembered is not on your last day, but now. That way you can live your life backward and make certain that you have a good ending.
Never thought of that, I muttered, locked into the power of Jet's suggestion that each of us should strive to have a good ending. The idea sent a shiver up my spine.
Unfortunately, most of us don't figure out what work and life are all about until we're too old to do anything about it, Jet continued. Most people don't discover how to live until just before they die. During their best years, too many are in a walking coma. They're not really conscious to what's truly important in life. Showing leadership, actualizing your potential, and doing your part to change the world through the work you are doing and the person you're becoming. Then, confronted with the wake-up call of their imminent end, these sleepwalkers start to dig beyond the superficial and go deep. They begin to realize that at birth, they'd received stunning talents and precious gifts, along with the corresponding responsibility to polish that genius so they could express it over the course of their lives and elevate the lives of everyone around them in the process. But by the time they figure all this out, it's too late to do anything about it. So they die, unfulfilled. I hung on to every one of Jet's words. He seemed to be a man of great wisdom. In this materialistic world, we chase titles, fast cars, and big bank accounts in a search for greatness, when in truth, all that we really want, we already have. The excellence and the happiness we crave is inside of us. We're looking for it all in the wrong places, in position and social status and in things like net worth. But before you know it, Blake, each of us will be dust. And the street sweeper gets buried next to the CEO. And titles, prestige, and university degrees don't matter much at the end. All that truly counts is whether you grew into all you could have been and whether you showed leadership by using your potential to positively contribute to the lives of other human beings. And it all begins within, so your absolute best can shine.
What exactly do you mean by all we want we already have, Jet? I definitely am all about leading without a title now and being exceptional at my work, but I have to admit that I want a nice apartment, better things, and a new car. I don't have them right now. I get that showing real leadership will bring all those things to me, but I don't have them right now.
I say this with great respect, Blake. I really don't think you actually want each of those things you mentioned.
But I do, I insisted.
No, you don't. Jet offered in a friendly way. I think what you really want are the feelings that having those things will generate within you. Feelings like contentment, gratitude, and inner peace. And all I'm saying is that through some dedicated work on your interior life, you can drive some extraordinary breakthroughs within your exterior life. Lead yourself first, he repeated.
Very interesting, I observed. Jet was right, as I quickly thought through his point.
In our world, we define our success by the things we have, rather than by the people we've become.
Rather than measuring our progress by how many lives we're influencing, we gauge it by how much money we're making and how many promotions we're receiving. It seemed to me that as a society, we're focusing on all the wrong things, sadly, and that we've lost sight as to what real success is all about. No wonder most of us are miserable. No wonder so many in our world are medicating themselves with too much food, too much TV, and too much sleep.
We are pursuing goals that will never make us happy. There's nothing wrong with having nice things, Jet clarified as he handed Tommy and me bottles of water. I'm an esthete. You know what that means, Blake?
No, I don't, Jet.
It means someone who loves beauty. I so adore being surrounded by beautiful things. The furniture in this spa is first rate, the food I eat is of the best quality, and the clothes I wear come from the most stylish stores in New York. A long time ago, I made a commitment to go through life first class, and because I feel rich,
I've become rich.
You're wealthy? I asked, surprised that a massage therapist would have so much money.
I am, Blake. I have a pretty large team of assistants who help me here. We have 5 satellite offices to serve other communities, and we train a ton of people who want to get into this wellness profession. This spa and my business have given me financial freedom, and so beauty travels with me everywhere I go,
Jet continued in his focused way.
I love the best things in life. I adore wonderful music. I travel to fun places on my vacation, and I drink great wine. Life's just too short to drink bad wine, he added with a wink. But here's the key. Those things are not who I am. I'm not attached to any of them. I own them versus them owning me. Hey, I'm human, so nice things make me feel great. And I want to be super clear that there's nothing wrong at all with having a beautiful outer life. That makes the journey better. But I don't use my possessions to define me. People really run into trouble when what they have forms the basis of who they are and their identity in the world.
Why?
Because if they lose their things, they lose themselves. So I love good things and the material pleasures that this world has to offer, but I'm no slave to them. I make the most of every day, and I cherish life itself. Who I'm becoming is far more important than what I own. And the impact I'm having on my teammates, clients, and loved ones by the positive example I model is far more important to me than the amount of cash I'm making. And by the way, Blake, if your focus is on making money, it's off doing great work, the very thing that will make you more money.
Interesting. Really interesting, I replied.
All I'm suggesting to you is that becoming an extraordinary leader without a title starts with a real commitment to becoming an extraordinary person. The great news is that it's just not possible to grow your interior world and not see corresponding growth in your exterior world. So working on yourself really is job number one.
I was a little surprised to hear such emphasis being placed on the building of an excellent inner life as a prerequisite to world-class leadership. Most business books seem to mention the importance of personal mastery only in passing, so I'd never thought it was relevant to success at work.
As you access and allow the natural leadership power that slumbers within you to awaken, everything you touch will be transformed. As you grow in your awareness of your true nature and become a more confident, creative, and superb person, your interactions with others cannot help but get to a whole new level of greatness.
That does make sense, I acknowledged. As I have more faith in my abilities, more courage to persist in the achievement of my goals, and a brighter fire in my belly, it only seems logical I'll do fantastic work and see superior results. The better I become as a person, the better everything I do will be.
Yes, but in so many ways, the goal is not so much about becoming a better person, Blake. You're actually perfect just the way you are. The real mission is about remembering rather than improving.
Not sure I follow you.
You're perfect the way you are, Jet repeated. Self-leadership isn't about improving, because there's nothing really wrong with you. It's more about remembering. Remembering your inner leader, and then making your relationship with it stronger each day. Self-leadership has so much to do with simply reconnecting to the person you once were, to your true nature.
What is my true nature, Jet?
You knew it when you were a little kid. When you were really young, society hadn't taught you to deny your dreams, stifle your genius, and smother your passion. Back then, you weren't afraid to take some risks, learn new things, and be completely comfortable being exactly who you are. As a little kid, you were still deeply aware of your natural leadership powers. You were still awake to the call on your life to make your mark, to realize big things, and to live life as a glorious adventure. But as you got older, something terrible happened. The world around you started to do its job on you. The programming of your parents, your peers, and society began to shut you down to your absolute best. The messages of the mob taught you not to be an original, to dim down your vision, to play small with your days.
I'd have to agree with what you're saying, Jet, I offered excitedly. I want my natural power back, my power to lead, to influence, and to leave everything I touch better than I found it, I added, using some of the words I'd learned from Anna.
Personal leadership,
leading from the inside out so that your bigness can be seen, is the DNA of all enduring excellence, Blake. Unfortunately, as I've been saying, this really is a lost value in today's world. We've forgotten to place a premium on self-mastery as a means to arrive at leadership mastery. We've forgotten that if all the people within an organization rise to world class in the way they think, feel, and behave, the enterprise will automatically rise to world class. All we care about these days seems to be external gratification. More titles, more money, more things. All designed to receive the approval of the society around us instead of the approval of our best selves. Such a waste of our time and talent.
But you're not saying there's anything wrong with titles or making money or getting nice things, right? I asked, just to be certain.
Like I said, nothing wrong with them at all, Blake. Look, the lead without a title philosophy doesn't mean that organizations dispense with titles. That would lead to complete chaos. And I'll be the first to say that one of the most important aims of a business must be to make fantastic profits. But there are a bunch of other priorities as well, Jet mentioned in a relaxed tone. He then picked up an apple from a fruit bowl on the counter and took a bite. Please, help yourself, guys, he insisted graciously. In the end, ego pursuits just don't bring greatness to an organization, or happiness for you as a person. They really don't. I've met a few billionaires down here in this spa. They come in here wearing their Zegna suits and their Patek Philippe watches. We talk. And after a while, they open up to me. Most of the rich people I've met aren't very happy. Lots of money is the only thing a lot of wealthy people have. They're actually quite poor as I think about it. Poverty isn't just a lack of money, it's a scarcity of anything. And so many high net worth individuals lack self-respect, a sense of well-being, physical health, and internal fulfillment.
Such helpful insights, Jet, I said, as I reached for an apple myself.
So that's why my suggestion to you is to be a great leader, first become a great person. Lead yourself, Blake. Only then will you be able to lead others and influence those around you by the powerful example you set. Begin within, in a culture that only celebrates externals. And remember that greatness is an inner event with outer consequences. Once you awaken your inner leader, worldly success is the guaranteed result.
Jet paused for a moment, apparently deep in thought.
I saw a kid walk into the restaurant upstairs with his parents yesterday. Guess what it said on his t-shirt?
Tell me, I asked.
It said, I was born awesome. Isn't that wonderful, Blake? I was born awesome. Most of the average work that people do and most of the unsuccessful lives that too many people lead comes from the unfortunate fact that most people have disconnected with their awesomeness,
Jet noted with a laugh as he took another bite of his apple.
So true.
Tommy observed, smiling.
Every single one of us alive today has greatness within. We have talents and potential that, if mined, would allow us to shine at extraordinary levels. There are no extra people on the planet. You, me, Tommy, and all the people we surround ourselves with have been built to lead and made for stunning success. But because we've been brainwashed into doubting our magnificence and taught to stay small versus dream big, we've lost a sense of who we truly are. We really have disconnected with our essential nature. We've buried our best underneath layers of insecurity, doubt, and fear. You were born awesome, Blake. Own that truth, exclaimed Jet as he raised a hand into the air and high-fived me.
All three of us chuckled.
I loved being with these two people. They were so positive, faith-filled, and real.
I guess that's a large part of what leadership is all about, making people feel better about themselves, and reminding people that, like that kid's shirt said, they really are awesome.
So start getting to know the leader within you. That's truly the secret to high performance at work and within your personal life. It's incredible to me how so many business people attempt to lead other people without first having started with leading themselves. And so they inevitably end up sabotaging their efforts because they are still clinging to their own limiting beliefs, negative behaviors, and personal barriers. Wherever you go, you take you with you.
And if your self-respect is low, your character is weak, and you're full of fear, no matter what you try to do in your work, nothing great will happen. But if you begin to clean out the less-than-ideal part of you, explosive results will occur. Please start working on yourself today, Blake, because life waits for no one. It speeds along in its own merry way with your cooperation or without it. Don't put off until tomorrow what you know must be done today. Tomorrow just might never come. That's the reality. Which brings me to my acronym about the 5 rules for this 4th and final leadership conversation.
Been looking forward to your acronym, Jet, I said happily.
Shine, was Jet's simple reply. Personal leadership and self-mastery is all about doing 5 basic things.
Cool.
Work at these 5 ideas to awaken your inner leader and grow your internal life every day, Blake. Just as a pro athlete practices daily to become the best, you should practice daily to become your best you. The first 40 days of living by these rules will be the hardest.
Why?
Because during that initial transition period, you will be in the process of installing new habits. You'll be releasing the old, comfortable ways of doing things and shedding the previous behaviors that no longer serve your ascent into personal mastery. During those first 40 days, you'll be setting up new patterns and literally rewiring your brain while you recalibrate your inner controls. It's a stressful process, filled with discomfort. It'll feel hard and confusing, so it's natural to think that something's wrong. But that's not at all the case. You're just changing and growing. Everything's perfect, actually. Your former habits of thinking and being must disintegrate before better ways of behaving can begin to integrate.
Ty took me through some of this, Jet. I learned that change creates disruption, but that disruption needs to happen if I want to grow and really lead.
Exactly right. As you expand personally, you'll experience destruction of your old self. But destruction is actually a pretty special thing.
Really? I asked.
Sure. Past ways of being need to be destroyed and released before new and better ways of thinking and behaving can appear. You need to clean out what no longer serves you before space is available for something even better to enter.
Ty taught me that, too. He told me that breakthroughs into all the good things waiting for us can't happen without breakdowns of all the old structures that are limiting us.
Well, our snow pro is a bright man. And before new and improved beliefs and behaviors can be integrated, the weak ones do need to be disintegrated. So give these 5 rules at least 40 days for them to feel natural to you. Challenge yourself passionately for those first 40 days. Don't give up.
I like that, the 40-day challenge.
It's one of the keys to making real and sustained change, along with the importance of making small and steady improvements every single day, rather than massive ones that'll only set you up to fail.
Small daily improvements over time lead to stunning results, I recited proudly.
Jet smiled. Yep, you're onto it. Small victories stack up into big results over the passage of time.
So, what does SHINE stand for?
The S will remind you to see clearly. Leadership has so much to do with perceiving your conditions and circumstances clearly. Every one of us has flaws in our perception. Every one of us has a natural tendency to see through our blind spots and limiting beliefs. Often, we see situations through eyes of fear versus through the lenses of opportunity. And so these flaws in our perception keep us stuck at average. I guess what I'm suggesting to you, Blake, is that we each have areas where what we think we see is not actually what we are seeing. But it's a rare individual who has done the inner work required to develop the self-awareness to recognize their misperceptions of reality. We are blind to our blind spots. We see the world not as it is, but as we are. And we don't know what we don't know.
Are you serious? Most of us don't see reality clearly? I asked, surprised by what I was learning.
Definitely. If you are filled with fear and doubt, then when you go to work every day, you will project your internal state on your external conditions. You will miss opportunities to grow and succeed at the bookstore. You will question your ability to positively influence others and make a difference. You will work to survive rather than work to thrive. This will all happen not because of the way things truly are at work,
but because of the nature of your inner life and the way you are processing reality through your personal context. One way to really understand what I'm sharing is to think of a stained glass window. Each one of us has a stained glass window through which we perceive everything. This is nothing more than a filter through which we run all outer experiences.
What's the stained glass window made up of, Jet? I asked, deeply fascinated by what I was hearing.
It's made up of all the beliefs, rules, and ways of being taught to you by your parents, teachers, peers, and every other influence that has shaped you from the moment you were born. And it's forged from every conversation you've ever had with every person you've ever met and by every experience. All of that has created a story that you've sold to yourself on how the world works and how you get to show up in it. Remember, we see the world not as it is, but as we are. So if your stained glass window is a mess, your life will become a mess. If your stained glass window has a belief that says you can't lead without a title, then your actions will, of course, be consistent with that belief, and so you won't lead if you lack a title. If your stained glass window contains a rule that insists most people aren't trustworthy or most work is pretty meaningless, then your behavior is bound to match these self-created interpretations of the world outside of you. But here's the big idea to really sink your teeth into, Blake. What if that story you're telling yourself is completely untrue?
Jet asked as he sat down on a plush chair. Come on, that's hard to believe, I argued. Jet remained relaxed.
Please, just stay open to the notion that leadership is about developing high levels of self-awareness and thinking regularly about the accuracy of your thinking, and simply consider that your daily thoughts are nothing more than mere reflections of the belief system programmed into you by your parents, peers, and teachers, as well as all the other influences that have shaped your perceptions.
Pretty revolutionary stuff. I guess I've been socialized into thinking in a certain way. We're conditioned to accept a certain set of beliefs, and we think them so often, we come to feel that they are true, I observed. Jet quickly stood up and walked over to Tommy. He started massaging his shoulders.
Thanks, my brother, said Tommy. I needed this.
Jet kept on speaking while offering his former student this little gift.
Most people's thinking really isn't thinking. It's actually nothing more than the unconscious repetition of the thoughts they've been regurgitating since they were little kids. Most of us, and this is a sad fact, truly don't see reality, Jet restated. And that sad fact keeps us locked into mediocrity at work and in our personal lives. You were made to think brilliantly and see through the eyes of possibility rather than think badly and see through the eyes of fear.
I've never realized that my thinking and perception of outer conditions could be so faulty, I replied, genuinely shocked at the notion that the way I viewed my circumstances could be a reflection of some internal mental filter and some personal story I was telling myself instead of the way things really were.
That's the case for most of us, Blake. You need to know how very important your thinking is. Your thinking creates your reality. You're bound to get more of what you focus on. And your thoughts drive your actions. What holds us back in leadership and life are not the external realities, but our internal patterns of thought and the way we then behave in the face of those conditions. You need to shed your failure programs. Real leadership involves breaking through the limits of your mind so you can step into the highest strengths of your spirit.
So, exactly how do I begin to break through my mental barriers?
First, back to the athletic metaphor, you must begin to think like a champion. You have to take full responsibility for the thoughts you run through your brain, and that means understanding that your mind is no place for even a single negative one. Business people sometimes scoff at the idea of thinking positively. They minimize it and will tell you the concept has no place in business. But of course it does. Every business result is the direct result of the collective behavior of each of its people. And every action you take is the child of a thought. What I mean by that is that your thinking drives your behavior, and your behavior gives you your outcomes. So world-class work is obviously the result of world-class thinking.
Seems so simple, Jet, I acknowledged, starting to embrace the ideas I was hearing.
Even one bad thought is like a germ in your mind that attracts more germs to it.
Before a person knows it, their minds become infected. They can't see clearly and they can't think straight. They start seeing all that's wrong versus all that's right. The infection causes them to look for problems rather than to offer solutions. That sickness forces them to stop innovating, refrain from excellence, and deny their greatness. The disease makes them behave like victims instead of perform as leaders. You honestly can't afford the luxury of even one bad thought if you are committed to leading without a title.
You're suggesting negative thinking is a disease?
Of course it is, Blake. It's an obvious sign of an unhealthy mind. When your mind is healthy, your stained glass window is clear. You have strikingly awakened into the genius that you are and the brilliance you are meant to become. People who laugh at the concept of positive thinking should make a study of sports heroes, of legendary champions. Superstars deeply understand that the way you run your brain matters. They manage their thinking impeccably, focusing only on victory and paying no attention to the threat of adversity. And even when they get knocked down, they reprocess the event to see it as a gift. They see what others call failure as a chance to grow stronger and to begin over with an attitude that will make things even better. And again, remember that when you allow even one negative thought to run through your mind, you've actually started the process of it drawing other negative thoughts to it.
Like a single germ that draws in others, eventually creating a feeding frenzy, I confirmed.
Yes, Blake. The great leader Gandhi said it so well when he noted, "I will not allow others to walk through my mind with their dirty feet." So anytime your mind shifts into negative thinking, gently guide it back to thoughts that will support your commitment to show leadership and pure excellence. Anytime your mind focuses on difficulties, train it to concentrate only on opportunities. Please also remember that you'll get your expectations. Another way to put it is that your expectations at work and within your life become self-fulfilling prophecies. The results you expect are the results you'll see. That's an incredibly important thing to remember. If your expectation is that people at work will not support you and will let you down, then you will behave in a way that is aligned with that belief. So you'll be closed and protect your turf. You'll work in a silo rather than collaborate and show teamwork. Your very behavior will cause your coworkers to feel you are cold, competitive, and not really trustworthy. And so, of course, they will not support you. Your expectation will have become self-fulfilling and very real. I'll give you another example, Blake. If you have an expectation that you will never be able to become a superstar at the bookstore where you work, then there's no way in the world you will behave in a way that will allow you to fly. We never act in a way that is inconsistent with the way we see ourselves. Human beings just don't behave in a way that's not congruent with their expectations.
And their stained glass windows, I contributed quickly.
Correct, stated Jet with strong encouragement. Each one of your thoughts is creative. You really cannot afford the luxury of even one negative thought, because every one of them creates something and leads to some result in your outer world. Every thought you think generates a consequence.
I haven't given much thought to my thinking. It's all been so automatic. I thought I had no control over my thoughts. They just popped into my mind.
Most of us think that, Blake. We've been thinking the same thoughts for so long that our thinking feels like a deeply ingrained habit that we believe we have no control over. Because we've run our old story and our historical mental programs for so many years, they've become automatic and unconscious. But that doesn't mean we don't have power over them. And it doesn't mean we can't change them into habits of mind that serve our leadership potential. We can. We have absolute dominion over our thoughts. And the more personal responsibility you take for every one of your thoughts, the more powerful a thinker and a leader you will become. One thing that makes us fully human is our ability to think about our thinking, you know? Right now, in this very moment, you can sit quietly and inquire about the beliefs that run and thoughts that fill your mind each day. And as you spend more time in silent inquiry, you will build greater awareness of the thoughts you think.
And with greater awareness around the ones that no longer serve you, you can make better choices. And with better choices, of course, you will experience better results. As you know better, you can do better. So, my thoughts are creative.
Uh-huh,
replied Jet. And as the legendary founder of Motown Records, Berry Gordy Jr., once said, a winner is a winner before he's become a winner. By becoming a superb thinker and believing in your greatness, you will literally create what you are thinking. The statesman Benjamin Disraeli said it so well, to believe in the heroic makes heroes. Unchain your brain and just watch what ridiculously wonderful things begin to happen.
Perfect. And I love the idea of spending some time each day in silent inquiry, as you put it, I offered.
Here's what I suggest you do every morning if you are really serious about awakening your inner leader so that you begin to see stellar results in your outer life, Blake. Get up an hour earlier every day and spend 60 minutes in self-development. This is your morning recalibration ritual, a regular period you give yourself for preparation and practice. Just like pro athletes train daily so they win on the playing field, this is your private time to prepare and practice, so you're at your absolute best once you step onto the playing field of business when you get to work. Blake, before a jet takes off, the pilots run a ritual. They check the flight plan, they set the controls, and they evaluate the instrument panel. Only then are they ready to fly. Same metaphor applies to any leader without a title. If you want to fly and radiate your genius, you need to have an early morning preparation ritual. This is the time to reset yourself, to lock into your flight plan for the day, to reconnect with your core values, to renew, regenerate, and reground. It's a period to work on your mind, strengthen your body, nourish your emotional life, and fuel your spiritual dimension. This daily discipline alone will work miracles for you in your career and within every other area of your life. It will boost your motivation. It will restore the work-life balance. It will bring back a ton of passion and help you see your world through the eyes of wonder again. Remember, when you feel great and your interior life is at its best, everything you touch is influenced by that stand for personal mastery. Jet then escorted me into one of the treatment rooms. Tommy followed.
Blake, you're in for quite a treat, Tommy said with a big smile.
Ever had a massage, Blake? Jet asked as he pulled open the sheets on the table.
Nope, I replied, feeling a little unsure of what I was about to experience.
Well, allow me to give you one. I know it's been an intense day for you, so a good massage will relax you.
Okay, I replied as I lay down on the massage table.
Jet began to massage my neck and back. The stress I'd been carrying for years seemed to instantly melt away.
Tommy was right. Jet had hands of magic.
During your personal leadership hour every morning, there are 7 practices I suggest you do, Blake. You don't have to do all 7 every day. Actually, doing all 7 of these peak performance habits will be next to impossible. But I wanted to share them with you because they form what I call the personal leadership toolbox. These 7 best practices, the 7 fundamentals, are the most powerful tools for anyone serious about awakening their inner leader and working at wow. By engaging in them consistently during your morning training period, you will experience dazzling results at the bookstore, as well as in every other dimension of your life. Conversely, if you neglect doing even 1 of these 7 fundamentals regularly, mediocrity will start to settle in, and an enemy called average will become your constant companion. Jet started to knead my back more forcefully. You've got a bunch of knots here, Blake. I really recommend you get a massage more often. Your health and energy levels will soar, and you'll feel a whole lot happier.
I'll definitely second that,
offered Tommy enthusiastically as he leaned against a wall and played with his hair while glancing down at his SpongeBob SquarePants watch.
When the quality of your work is anything less than world-class, you can trace this back to a failure to be doing 1 of the 7 fundamentals, Jet continued.
So, what are the 7 best practices that I need to be doing? I asked, still relaxing on the table.
Here, said Jet,
I have them on a card for you. Take this with you, and every morning during your personal leadership hour, pick a few of the best practices from this list to perform. And by the way, I strongly urge you to begin your hour of self-development at 5 a.m. every day. As I suggested earlier, it'll take you about 40 days to install this new habit. For 40 days, you'll feel some stress.